And more time, the more I am conscious of the fact that the whole thing is a translation. And I have come to the habit of not putting too much emphasis on the exact language.
Yes, the literal.
However, there are important clues in the exact
I need to know what
language.
those are.
Right. And we'll talk about a couple of those today that I pulled out specifically. I'm not a Hebrew scholar. I'm not a Greek scholar. In fact, I didn't have to take either for seminary. But it gets pulled in over and over as you're doing other classes. So there are some comments I can make about the Hebrew that shows up in part of our reading today. That might be helpful.
And when you read something just on your own because you're reading the Bible, you read it differently, I think, than when you read it because you're going to be talking to people at a Bible study.
Absolutely.
Oh, sure.
And so you notice the use of words that you didn't notice before, or it was such a long time ago, if you noticed them, you've forgotten.
Absolutely. It's the difference of whether you're reading a novel just to enjoy the reading or reading a novel to talk about in a book club, even.
Exactly.
All right. So I thought we'd start with praying. And they give us a lovely collect that's from the Book of Common Prayer. O God, who wonderfully created and yet more wonderfully restored the dignity of human nature, grant that we may share the divine life of him who humbled himself to share our humanity, your Son, Jesus Christ, our Lord. Amen. I like these are kind of themed along with the reading, so I like those. So, what did we read this week? We should have read
Creation.
one story. Well, actually, two
Three.
stories. Two.
Three, because we also have added John.
Well, if you wanted to, you didn't have to.
Oh,
That was an option,
I
right?
thought
So
that was significant.
I think it is, and that I make some comments about it.
Yeah,
In
me
fact, the
too. Me too.
first comment I have written down is about John, but the story that we read actually was just Genesis chapters 1, 2, and 3 with a little bit left out. Now, if you're looking for the little bit that got left out, it happens on page 14 of the reading. In the Garden of Eden, you see the first whole paragraph there, and it ends with knowledge of good and evil. So you're looking for
Yes,
page
kind of
14,
in the
15 at
middle.
the top. It's on the third page of our reading. It says the Garden of Eden at the top left,
Oh, okay, yeah.
and then there's a little box that says scenic view,
Yeah.
and then you go down a little bit and it says knowledge of good and evil. And then there's a paragraph break right about in the middle of the page. Are we fine? Yep, right here. We skip from chapter 2, verse 9, and the next verse that's there is 2:15. So they left out a little bit about a river running through Eden, is what it's left out. It's not critical to the story. I think it was a good deletion, but just so you know, that's where the little bit that got left out today is. And I'll try and point that out because I don't think that there's ever a case where the bit that's left out influences the story, but there might be some background that might be helpful for later on.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like I noticed something about the when the creation of the garden, he created the whole garden and everything, and Adam was there. And then he created a small garden inside the other garden.
Okay.
Right?
We'll talk about
Oh,
that.
okay.
So what we're going to do first is retell the story. So what
Yes.
happened in the story? Oh, come on, everyone's going to start in the beginning.
It was we, and let us, that was kind
The world was dark and there
Okay.
was
was
nothing.
dark. The
It was
world was
dark.
dark. And then what happens?
Then there was light.
And how did the light come to be? So I'm trying to prompt you to fill in the story here.
The
So
word
that's
and the light were the
spoken.
same thing, and they were always there.
It was spoken into
Right.
existence, the
Okay, the
light.
light, God said,
Well, let there be light.
Let there be light.
There, but I mean,
and there was light. And then what happens? God
said it was good.
Said it was good. And something else happens. And then what happens?
Oh, it was water, and then he pulled up.
That was the end of a day.
Yeah.
That's where I was going with this. Okay, so that's the end of the day. Then we have another day happen. And something similar happens. Do you remember what happens on day two?
What are there before yet? I can't remember.
There was a dome in the midst.
Dome
of
to
the
separate
waters.
The
water from the sky. Right?
The water from the waters. Yeah,
yeah.
The water from
so the
sky.
The water was there.
Right. The water was there in the beginning because it says a wind from God swept over the waters of the earth or something like that. And again, let there be.
Yeah, spoken into existence.
And then God made, and it was so, and that was the end of the day.
That was good.
And this one doesn't say, and God saw that it was good.
No.
I think we read it into it, but
yes.
It's not actually written there.
That's my problem with thinking, as you're thinking, what was in the story. I'm thinking how
you think
in.
About the story, right?
Yes.
And that's why, that's exactly why we're doing this whole encounter of the story.
I mean, when people translate something, it's that kind of a thinking process. Mm-hmm. And so it's not exactly what was said.
Right. Right. So then we get to the third day. You remember what happened on the third day?
Gathered the waters.
Land.
Right? Land.
Dry land.
And God saw that it was good. We're back to good.
Yes.
And then, on the land,
plants.
We have plants growing. And it was good. So we have two goods on the third day. And that was the third day. I'm kind of modeling how I go through the story and retell it in my own. And we're actually just going to stop, I think, before we get to the Garden of Eden and then redo this again with the Garden of Eden. Because I think the two stories, while they're related, are better looked at separately.
Yeah.
All right, then we get to day four.
Living creatures.
No.
No?
Oh, that's right. I'm looking. I'm cheating. It's the... Mm. The moon and the stars.
Oh.
The sun and the moon and the stars.
And
God saw that it was good. And that was the end of the day. Which we now have formally defined what a day and a night are previously.
Mm-hmm.
But and then?
Then it's the birds and the fish, right?
The birds and the fish,
yeah. The
aquatic creatures and birds. And God saw that it was good. And we get the famous saying here, be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters and let the birds multiply. We're going to come back to be fruitful and multiply. That's why I'm calling that word out,
mm-hmm.
or that phrase out. And that was the fifth day. And then God said, what's the sixth day?
The animals
and
the people.
And the people. And people were made in, you mentioned this,
yeah.
our image.
Our image, yeah. Let us make them in our image.
I never noticed that for years.
But then God created humankind in his image. In the image of God, he created them male and female. So we got some weirdness going on here, which Jeanette asked us to talk about.
Yeah.
So we will talk about it. And again, be fruitful and multiply. And God saw everything he made, and indeed it was very good. I think they even call that one out in the story.
Right.
And that was the sixth day.
You mentioned that the other day about one, you know, very being put at the end, and I, that's the kind of thing that I just tend to ignore because I think it's a language thing. He said good six times. Maybe the author wanted just to vary it a little bit and said it was very good. You would do that. I would do that.
Right, yeah. And I think there's some truth to that. Maybe we read too much into it. Right. But then again, for that to come forward from however many years ago as continually saying very may be important. And we don't know.
There were fewer choices, though. You know, this means this, 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 and this.
True.
Take your choice.
Sure. And then what happens?
Water came up from here.
We just finished day six.
He rested then from the work.
Well, then he decided to take leave. Mm-hmm.
Then we rest because we're tired. Although it doesn't say he's tired.
No,
it does say he had finished all the work he had done and rested.
And that could be taken as modeling for the people.
Could be. Now, what day the seventh day is under a lot of discussion. But there is a day to rest is the important part that I think we can take away from that.
I thought this was an interesting statement that never crossed my mind before. It said, every plant of the field before it was in the earth, and every herb, you know, so was that what where God was? Was that all that nice stuff, herbs, and was it up there with him? And he took some of it and put it down on earth, or am I just reading it wrong?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
I always think, too, about how he made everything with the seeds, you know, so that it can continue.
Which came first, the seeds or the stuff?
Yeah. Well, it said they contain the seeds.
Oh, right.
Plants yielding seeds. And.
Yeah. Why don't we pause here from our reading? It's going to be one of those days.
Yes.
What three words would you use to kind of describe this story? That we've read so far.
To me?
And, or, if you don't like that question, if you were posting on Facebook and had to summarize the story in a sentence or two. So what I'm trying to get at is, what is the meat of the story that you read for you?
To me, it's God's breath, God's word, breathed life into the planet Earth. Because with me, I had 5 months of speech therapy, learning how to get words out by breathing at the same time. And so then we just had a reading on the word, and my thinking had always been it was the breath of God that breathed creation.
Why?
And so when I had the therapy, I thought, wow, the two go together, and they did a creation too.
Why?
I think I would just call it a story of how we got here.
Yeah. It is.
Okay.
I think maybe about how it was very thoughtfully created for the total existence of everything to kind of depend on each other.
Can you say more about what that might mean to you about the quality of God?
Well, he's a caretaker.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Whereas for you, it sounds like God is more of, not necessarily that he isn't a caretaker, and I hate using the word he, but I'm not going to keep saying God over and over. A creator, but not necessarily as human as she might sound, as hers might sound.
Well.
Am I putting words in your mouth? Very possibly.
You're constricting it.
Okay.
It's just that it takes me a lot longer to get those kind of thoughts that are in my head
okay.
out So I'm on your page, but I see it as the fact that in the story he speaks and says, let there be. And in order to do that, it's breath. So it's the breath of God putting life into the world. So he gives his breath to the world. He must have a reason.
Okay.
Because we're so finite and it's so difficult to understand anything that goes beyond birth, yes, just for the sake of a word, but the word creation, it's something that's beyond my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd like to use that word, but I don't know what it means and how it actually takes place.
Our knowledge is very limited.
Absolutely. And I'm going to keep returning to this. What does that say about what we think God is as we continue our stories here? Because depending who's writing or depending...
On why
or who was writing.
Yes.
We're going to see that God kind of takes on different forms, some of which look like a person and others of which are kind of scary and unapproachable.
Yeah. In many ways, though, I think that God is what we need God to be. We need to be careful.
Now that sounds like something you're going to get thrown out of church for.
Yes.
No, I'm just kidding. In the Middle Ages.
No,
but certainly more than us.
Yes.
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 What was surprising about the story, now that you took the time to read it, as we said, not as a novel, but as something you were going to discuss in book club? And we're just talking about the first half of the creation, not Garden of Eden part.
Okay.
I know, Marilyn, you came up with a couple questions you have, which we will get to, so don't feel like I put them off.
This is just stuff.
Okay.
Well, the three parts of the Trinity I mentioned, because when God is talking to the Word, that's two, and then later on it says something about, and the Spirit went across the water, so there you got three. So I like that because it coincides with our Trinity.
The Spirit or the breath, depending on how it's translated,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the breath of God.
When I was, young, in Sunday school myself, I don't ever remember, I don't know if it's the way they read the story, whatever, they never talked about that, how all the Trinity was present at creation.
Well, because the Trinity is a later
concept.
Creation.
Right.
And
I
have to wade carefully so that I don't get brought up on charges. But yeah.
Well,
yeah,
that's just it. Was it? Or was it always there in a different, a third form?
Interpretation.
Is 9/10.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever a group of people at a particular point focused in on, like we're focusing in on caring and on spirit, but other generations, other societies, that might have been immaterial. It was survival. It was other things that we don't even think of. So, and how much we put our own interpretation into the words of other people makes a huge difference, which is what really confuses translations. Because language changes, and language from language changes.
Yeah. And there's pieces missing compared to the language you're used to.
Yes.
If you go back, having to fill in things, right?
Yes, and what a word means to me is totally different than what that same literal word would mean in 10 different languages, in 10 different countries. And yet we insist that they all mean the same thing when they don't.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the first three words of Genesis. In the beginning. It's echoed in the Gospel of John. If you did the reading of John 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. But there's some discussion about the actual translation from Genesis, which it probably is more properly translated when God began to create, or even in the beginning of God's creation. How does that change how we hear this story? Instead of saying in the beginning of God's creating.
Sounds like he's been busy doing other things, possibly.
Okay, I'm going to take that a step further and say that it never says the creation stops.
Yeah. Yes.
And so one of the ways that people can read Genesis now is creation is still happening, which I think kind of supports that whole ecology idea of, you know, how we need to care for the earth because God is still working here. But I also think
there's a universe that's still expanding.
Right. We talked about that last week, didn't we? About beings on other planets. Didn't that come up briefly? Yeah, I thought so. It also doesn't say that in the beginning, God formed everything together and created something. It doesn't say that nothing was there. It says that there was a formless void and darkness covered it, but it doesn't say that nothing was there. So one of the ways that Genesis has been looked at in the past is something called ex nihilo, which means out of nothing, that God created the Big Bang and it came out of nothing.
Yes.
But the Bible doesn't actually support that either.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that there's water. Mm-hmm. There's water there, and, you know.
So, yeah, so water can be something that is really calming. If you think about, like, a fountain and sitting near water. But water can be extremely destructive, too.
Yes, think of Noah's Ark.
Right, or hurricanes, or the whirlpool on the Niagara River. It's going to suck everything in. It's chaos, right?
Yes.
So another word that we can say instead of the darkness of the waters is really chaos.
Mm-hmm.
So the story we're reading is about God forming order from chaos.
Apparently, chaos is something he can live with. Or maybe can't live with. That's why.
Maybe that's why everything was formed, to create order from it.
Yeah. Decided to clean the house and get rid of the junk.
Or, you know, there are other people who say, well, the chaos is from another culture that came before us and desecrated things, and so it's reforming it. So if you think about Noah's Ark and the flood on the earth, we're reforming, so... I don't necessarily support that one, and it looked from your faces like none of you do either, but just mentioning it.
Yeah,
well, it's kind of a scary thought when you think of it. When
right, because what's going to happen to us?
Ahead of you, and you just get rid of them and start a new world. And I've had those kind of thoughts relative to the universe at this point, and the Earth with climate change and everything. I wake up in the middle of the night and you're stewing about something, and then my brain just takes off on this storytelling voyage. And so I thought to myself, well, Noah's Ark got them out of the first mess of civilization. So Noah's Ark this time may be a spaceship to another universe. And so there are ways that the universe is, because we know there's more than one. Mm-hmm. So who knows? Mm-hmm. No matter how you look at it, it was scary, and it was very scary for the people at Noah's time.
Yeah.
Because only a few got picked to be on the ship.
Whatever kind of ship that might be.
Yes.
So let's go back to the 6 days. Day one was light. Day two was creating the dome, which separated the waters. Day three was the land with the plants. Day four, then we added the sun, the moon, the stars, the heavenly bodies. Day five, we added the fish and the birds. And then day six was the land animals and humans. What's significant, and I don't know if any of you have ever done a big study on Genesis before, so give me a thumbs up if you have, or some kind of...
Yeah, but different.
Okay.
Yes.
Day one was creating the light. Day four was putting the light into it. Remember? So there was light and there was dark. Day four was the sun, the moon, and the stars, which we'll talk about in a little bit as well. Because they're an afterthought, it sounds like.
Specific pieces of
specific
light.
Specific pieces, right. Day two was setting the dome, which separated the waters. And then day five, well, we filled the waters below with aquatic creatures and the monsters of the deep and the birds up in the heavenly waters. Which there's something to be said about using water and chaos in the sky. And there being a metaphor between those two. And then day three was creating the land and the plants. And then day six was putting the animals and the humans on the land.
I find it interesting that the animals and the humans came along together.
I do too.
And I always found it interesting that there were waters above and waters below.
And I think if you think about water as a term for chaos, that absolutely makes sense.
Well, it makes sense scientifically as well, as the atoms that make up, and I'm not a scientist.
I don't think they were thinking about that back in 3000 BCE, though.
No, but everybody wants to know, you know, how this possibly can be a story of creation when science is doing all this other stuff and it's not even related to this kind of a storytelling regime.
But go back to our minds are limited, and so people had to try and find ways
exactly.
to explain things that they didn't understand and that we probably still don't understand at all.
But the water in the beginning used to come up this way. It didn't come from up here.
Yeah.
It came from up down
yeah.
here. But what do you think? I mean, years and years ago, the only way to transmit information of one, of whether real or not, was stories, talking.
Yes.
And
or pictures.
Well, yeah, okay. So supposing this whole thing is the story of a father making it up and talking to his son and how it came to be, and it's a story that he made it for his son. I don't really believe that, but, you know, that's a possibility.
It is a possibility. It's not supported by what we know about some other ones coming up, but it is a possibility.
Well,
absolutely.
Well, and the thing is, it's the groundwork of how the, whatever, however people came up with the feeling that they had knowledge of this so that they needed to transmit it. That was the basis of the story. There was a need to find a way to put these ideas in their heads into words that people would listen to and begin to realize there was a reasonable reason to think this. And so it gets embellished and changed, but it always comes back to the same set of pieces. So it's a set story, eventually, and the set story, depending on the speaker, has more adjectives and adverbs than the previous one, but it doesn't ever change the set story.
Right, you might describe something as colored as opposed to there was no color attributed to that
right.
thing before, but now all of a sudden
of a
it's
sudden
a speckled red
yes.
tadpole
and
or something.
A green
yeah.
lizard.
Right.
And
but then people associate
yes.
that color with the meaning that wasn't even present in the original story.
Exactly. But that's life and that's storytelling. I mean, storytelling, oral traditions are sacred
Well, traditions in the church are sacred.
Well,
too.
Well, yeah.
Which we'll talk about too. I have a story.
But oral tradition through the history of mankind, as far as we know it, is a sacred concept of knowledge that we don't have any other way to grasp.
I know that the Noah's Ark story is a part of the Native American heritage, but is the creation story as well?
Not yes. Native. Well, yes, and yes. Yes. But we're going to go back to Babylonian times for our parallel of what the creation story mimics.
Because linguistically, that's where our story came from, was that language group and the Native indigenous stories are beautiful, and they're not that different.
There are aspects that are different, but
yeah, there's connotations, but they're still beautiful stories that give you the same information.
Mm-hmm. So just as an example of how we try, our human minds try to attribute significance to various things, and you may have heard the story before from Vicky, I'm not sure. There was an old New England church where it's set up similar to ours, and there was a pot-bellied stove on one side of the church that heated the church. And so the tradition in the church was, for the first half of the service, they would sit on the left side. And then at the peace, after everyone had shaken hands, they would all stand up and move to the other side of the church. And it was given significance because they wanted to be closer to the gospel and be closer to God's word, right? Well, the real truth behind it was that when the first person came in and started the stove, it provided warmth on that side of the church. But by the time they got halfway through the service, it was too hot, and so everyone just moved to the other side of the church. So that tradition of changing sides of the church had no basis of anything to do with what was going on during the service. It was just a comfort thing. Just like saying, oh, it's a green lizard, whereas before it was a lizard, the green means nothing, but someone has now decided, well, it was green because green meant this and so forth. So we have to take that into these stories as well and say, is this really something that matters? Like Marilyn was doing right at the beginning. Is this really something that matters, or is this something that might have been added over time? And so one way to do that is to look at some of the other stories that exist and see if they have the exact same detail. Perhaps that is important, but if this part it may mean nothing. I'm going to ask one more question, and then we're going to go to maybe a couple images and talk about our parallel for the day. What's the conclusion of this story? So many times it is God created humans, but that's not the end of the story. That's rest.
You needed rest, and that should be a commandment in stone, because the Western man does not believe it.
I think you're... And there's something to be said for our health and rest as well.
Yes, and if God even needed rest.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Uh-huh. My there was God. A modeling
We're
behavior
definitely
there.
Definitely not God, yeah.
Yeah, my father would be taking a nap and somebody would ask him something and he'd say, even God needed rest.
Uh-huh.
Go take your nap.
All right, so up on the screen I have an image that I found from a French manuscript that was in about, I think, the 1200s. It's an illumination of the Genesis story and in a Bible. And where do you think this image might have come from? What moment?
The waters above and the waters below.
Who's hanging out on the top?
I can't tell. Oh, they're angels.
They're angels, right? We don't hear angels in this story at all.
No.
Well, we do, believe it or not. Angels in the story show up as stars.
Oh.
So remember the moon and the sun and the stars? The stars are heavenly beings. And so when we see stars show up in the Bible, many times they're referring to angels.
You know, I'm sure you've all seen the ad on television or the public announcement thing about taking a walk in nature with a child, and the child's asking the father different simple childlike questions and comes up, and the voicing is beautiful. It's almost angelic. So, Daddy, do the stars ever get to visit their friends? And all of a sudden, there's a shooting star. And so there's several, there's a tree is one of these little pieces. To me, they're just kind of beautiful pieces of quiet poetry mixed in with commercials.
Mm-hmm. So the stars can represent angels or fallen heavenly beings. I mean, it depends on the story, but just for your future reference.
Yeah.
One of the things I forgot to mention is Dave 4 mentions the sun, the moon, oh yeah, and the stars.
And the stars, yes.
Dave 5 mentions the monsters of the deep and the other creatures of the sea and the birds. So we see something similar happening above as we do under the waters.
Under the
monsters of the deep and the other, what is it? The other water, I don't have my name.
Other creatures
of the water or something.
Yeah, yes.
And the birds of the sea, the winged
of
birds
the
of the air.
So you think that's...
So remember when we talked about water being chaos, we've got chaos up above with some things sprinkled in. And we've got chaos in the waters down below with monsters of the deep and some other things sprinkled in, and then winged birds. There's a parallel there that we can explore more fully. There is a whole 18 podcast series on the dragons in the Bible, done by Bible Project, which is really fascinating. It's about a 50-minute per session, 50-minute per podcast thing, but they talk about where dragons show up in the Bible. And dragons have their being as creatures of the deep, creatures of the water, the sea monsters, Leviathan. They use some other words. The Nahash, which is the snake in the Garden of Eden, is also referred to. So there's some fascinating wordplay within the Bible as well.
But that snake wasn't that the serpent you're talking about? He wasn't a bad creature until man came along, that we know of.
Correct.
And I found it interesting, and maybe it's in the second story, I have to look at it again, that everybody blamed everybody.
Oh,
yeah, because it is, because it's the apple story. The apple that may not have been an apple.
That's right.
Oh, we're still doing that. We're still doing that.
Yeah. This is another page from the same manuscript. Just wanted to show you.
It's a beautiful manuscript.
It's almost inverted, though. It looks more chaotic.
Of course, technology is not cooperating this week at all.
It hasn't been at my house either. I gave up.
Okay, another page from the same. I think that's where the plants are coming out of the land.
Yeah, it looks that way.
Is it? Or is that the creatures?
Trees.
Or is that, that winged
yes,
birds
and
creatures? There's the whale. So that is that. That's day 4.
And
right?
It has, looks like trees or bouquets and birds. And the rest of us.
And there's humans and the creatures. So that's day 6. I did not find a day 7 for this manuscript, which I thought was interesting.
The artist was resting.
The artist was resting. I'm sure that each of these took longer than a day.
Yes.
We are not as efficient as God.
Well, God's time is different than
that is true.
So it
that
could have
true.
Been an eon.
That is true. A day could be
an eon.
Weeks.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think the next picture I have is not going to work now. There's one more of creation, and that's a mosaic of some kind. I just thought it was pretty.
Yeah,
what do you, is there anything that is not faithful, for lack of a better term, about this image? Is there anything that strikes you as being out of place, or?
The sun and the moon have human features.
Most everything does. That isn't.
Well, is that human features or God's features?
True. There are angel-y type things around. If you see their faces in those.
Yeah.
Which really hard on a smaller TV. But.
Which we didn't really hear that the angels
no,
were.
No, we heard about stars, and there are stars. But
because God existed, so did the angels exist at the time? And your discussion of it, the beginning, or in the beginning.
It doesn't say no one else was with. I mean, it was a chaos and a formless deep, but it doesn't say nothing was there.
Yeah, and it doesn't honestly say that everything in the, everything in a broad sense of everything was chaos. It was chaos where God was and doing this, creating our universe.
What do you think these blue dots are over by the birds? Do you think it's just ways that the tiles have aged differently?
Could be. Could be insects.
You I was know, just looking at them when I was looking at this image and thinking, well, I wonder what those are. Am I reading too much into
they
it?
They ran
probably.
Out of light blue.
Yeah. Or they've been replaced over the ages.
Yeah, that
or
could
no.
be.
But the birds depend on the insects.
The birds are really, really prominent compared to the other animals, I would say, though.
Very
For some
colorful
reason,
birds.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think a lot depends on what the artist did in the way it paints, because there's a lot of really red on the up there, and you don't see any of that on the bottom there.
Do you see a monster of the deep that you would classify a monster?
Well, that was in the other picture, wasn't
it?
It
was.
I was thinking
yeah,
it
the
was
whale
down
was
below
there.
This rock. Maybe.
And we could perhaps not be seeing the bottom of it. I mean, that's all that's on the screen, but perhaps it could go down further and there could be things underneath it, like it could be depicting hell down below and we don't even know it.
Yeah.
But I thought doing something like this is not something you typically see in a Bible study where you look at images. And so, this talks to you in different ways too. Like you're going to remember all those birds and how brightly colored they are. The macaw and the flamingo. I didn't realize flamingos fly that high. I thought they kind of do the hop, jump, skip like a chicken, but maybe
they
do.
They can fly, I think.
No, they do fly.
Okay.
In the part with the sun and the moon.
Yep.
What's the kind of reddish maroon thing?
I think these are stars.
Yeah, but
and I think it's just a pretty star. Beetlejuice, maybe.
Mars.
Or it could be it could be a planet in the sun.
Yeah. Maybe by the time this was done, maybe they were aware that there was a red planet.
I didn't get in time of creation of these photos. I just did a quick search on photos.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
It's just curious.
So let's talk a little bit about other stories that might have influenced the biblical writers. As far as this first part, and they're going to be different depending upon which story we're talking about. So the primary source that we see around this time from the area that we think the Bible originated from is Babylonian, and it's called the Enuma Elish, E-N-U-M-A-E-L-I-S-H. It's written on 7 different tablets, which you see on the screen. And the story describes how the god Marduk became the king of gods and the chief god of Babylon. So while we don't necessarily see that part of this, it is called the Babylonian creation epic, although it's really kind of a hymn in praise of Marduk, but it It's called the creation epic because there is a flood story in it as well. Enuma Elish means when above, because that's how it starts. We're really creative. Kind of like when you see the Latin names of the Psalms in the books, it's always the first two or three words of the Psalm in Latin. Mm-hmm. So the story tells about how the freshwater and saltwater gods, and the saltwater god's name is Tiamat, that will be important in a minute, mixed their waters together and gave birth to other gods and the earth and the sky. So does that sound somewhat reminiscent of what we heard happening? We, maybe not the waters mixing together, but earth and sky were formed, and they were brought out of other gods doing something. Both of them offer an explanation of the structure of our cosmos, or the earth in this case, right? So Genesis said, here's how we brought order out of chaos. The Enuma Elish does the same thing. And actually, if we read back in Genesis, the second verse seems to allude to the battle between the storm god and the primeval god. The word the deep, so on the third line of our reading, is in Hebrew Tehom. Tehom. And they think it comes from the word Tiamat, which is the name of that god, the saltwater god. So there's some
connection. Some carryover.
Carryover, yeah. In the Bible, when we read the word Tehom, it's never preceded by a the. Oh, okay. It's always just by itself. So we really should be translating it. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of deep. Not that deep.
Covered the face, too.
The face of deep.
No. Like personified,
it
right?
Personified this god, because that is what was going on in the culture at that time. So they're using pieces of this creation story of the Enuma Elish. There it is. And these gods coming forth and creating, and this flood happening, and the waters mixing, and something happening. I keep saying flood story because they're talking about waters coming together. Not necessarily the flood of Noah, but it's called a flood story. What's interesting is that both in this and in other creation stories, and I don't have the actual names, this is just kind of a generic statement. In the Near Eastern cosmology, I guess is the best word for it, humans were created to do the work of gods. So they were created to do the work that the gods had been doing.
So is that so different from today when people say, you know, you talk to an older person and somebody said, you know, they'll say, I don't know why I'm still here. And somebody will say, well, that's because you haven't finished the job you were here to do.
I think so.
I mean, so it's a carry-on that just is human nature to think that we have a job to do, that we are here for a reason.
Yeah. Can you tell me what Genesis 1:28 starts with in your Bible, Marilyn?
1:28 is, and God blessed them, male and female. He had created them.
So that's actually similar to what we hear in the Bible. God created humankind in his image, male and female he created them. God blessed them, and God said to them, do this work. Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over everything that moves upon the earth. God said, I have given you every plant yielding seed that's upon the face of all the earth, and every tree, you shall have them for food. I have given and to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the air, and everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food. So God, in its own little way, the Bible is reminiscent of the God giving the humans who were created to do a task, that task to do. I don't know how we feel about that.
And probably every culture that has shared these stories amongst themselves and with their neighboring cultures, they probably all have a slightly different cultural slant to that whole idea, but it doesn't change the feeling that we have. There's something we're supposed to do. We don't just live and die and that's the end.
Right.
We were supposed to.
We are here to do something.
Yes.
And Genesis is telling us we were given a task to do by God. So in the culture of that time, that was my purpose on earth, was to fulfill these things, whether I was reading Genesis, which probably wasn't put together yet, or hearing the Enuma Elish and hearing what my task was.
And somehow the stewardship of the earth and the plants and the animals just kind of became understood. We were stewards of all of this that was given to us.
So I want to just read the beginning of this. It essentially is the parallel of Genesis 1, verses 1 and 2. And this is from the Enuma Elish. When on high no heaven had been named, when no earth had been called, when there were no divine elders, when there was nothing, nothing but Godfather Apsu and Mumu Tiamat, Godmother of all living, two bodies of water becoming one, when no reed hut was erected, when no marshland was drained, when there were no divine warriors, when no names had been called, when no tasks had been assigned. So it sounds really, there was nothing.
Tasks assigned.
And we're creating something. Well, we didn't get to the creating part. We're setting up, right? Mm-hmm. So in the beginning, when the world was a formless void.
A void.
When no heaven had been named, when there were no divine elders, there were no warriors, no huts were erected.
Which is hard to contemplate as a human. Nothingness is not in our mindset.
No. You can find transliterations of this online if you're interested. I just wanted to call that one out because I think it's pretty it's pretty obvious that that's the connection between the two. There are other parts that are used for like Ecclesiastes and Jeremiah that come back from this. And this little book that I have that I had to get for seminary, which is called Old Testament Parallels by Matthews and Benjamin, lists various parallels that they see in the Bible to various verses.
I just noticed something, and maybe it has nothing to do with anything here right now, but it says in verse 30, I have given every green herb for meat. Does that mean we created
so that's our
vegetarians?
That is our translation here. It says, I have given every green plant for food.
Yes, he says somebody changed meat to food or food to meat or whatever, and there's a difference. You know,
is that include. Which version? Is that King James?
This is the, yeah.
So what we've learned is that King James was translated for a specific reason and didn't always use
the right.
Well, I don't want to say the right because it was right for their purposes, but the most neutral term is, I guess, what I would say. So
food.
Meat would be what people eat probably at that time. Instead of saying for food, you could say meat, right? But
Today we would translate it to a vegetarian or anti-vegetarian.
We would just say food, right? I mean,
yes.
Right.
It would seem logical.
And we could go back and look at what that word actually is, and see whether it has an indication of sustenance or...
Yeah, I would like to do that sometime before I go, is read a copy of the original as close as we can get it.
So was the King James Version the first one printed in English?
That would be the one that was first printed on a printing press, yes.
From the Gutenberg,
yeah. And then the other one, the other phrase, or the other parallel that I wanted to call out, thank you, is to that Genesis, the end of the first chapter where we talked about be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. And the similarity here is I will knead blood and bone into a savage and aborigine will be its name. Let's ignore that for a second. But aborigine is important here because these aborigines will do the divine assembly's work. These savages will set the divine assembly free. So it's a parallel saying the people were placed on earth to do the gods' work, and they will set the gods free, whatever that means.
Aborigines is an interesting piece of vocabulary.
It is. And I don't know who translated that to Aborigine. Yeah.
That would be an interesting cultural exploration.
Well, and then it says savages. So we get the pretty easy leap from saying an Aborigine is a savage.
Yeah, which was a convenient thing for the church that was in power when all of these continents were discovered with Aborigines or indigenous. Indigenous is a much kinder level word.
The Enumelish also shows up extensively, not only in Genesis, but Exodus and Psalms, particularly four Psalms that are very close to some of the phrasing and terminology that's used. Psalms 8, 19, 50, and 104. And the part in Exodus is when Moses splits the sea.
That's what I figured.
Oh. Exodus 15. So I think that's where Jeanette was talking about going when we were talking about how does this fit in with stories of the time. And like I kind of figured, we've spent an hour and we're only through the first half of today's reading, which is fine. Yeah. We don't have any agenda that we have to get to, but...
So what does it really mean, though, that there's all these connections? I mean that...
Well, if you think about what would have been going on in cultures at that time, we don't have anything written down, right? It's all oral tradition. And so the tradition that these people had heard or that these people kept wherever they were, Babylonia, I mean, we don't know what culture it specifically came from, but that would have been a common story. And now we're moving from having 75 gods to having a god, right? We're going from polytheism to monotheism with a Trinitarian bent eventually, but that didn't necessarily start there, right? So how do we fit these stories of the 75 gods into this belief now that we only have one god? So we've got to alter our stories a little bit, but we have this really well-formed story about...
That's been there for
millions ages.
Millions of years, probably.
That has been told to our ancestors and their ancestors' ancestors and so forth.
And we don't give up our stories easily.
No. And so we're going to modify it a little bit to fit our needs. And so it makes sense that we would see similarities. What's interesting, perhaps more so than similarities, is the differences.
Yeah.
Which are not usually called out, but at least you can know that this has been a story going around, and so...
And that our story is not
It's not original. Right.
It existed in a somewhat different form that was massaged.
Mm-hmm. I want to know what's important, though.
Yes.
What's essential? What, you know, just.
Well, and what's essential is what's essential for you and your faith, essentially. No pun intended. Right? I mean.
Oh, okay. So, there's no definition.
So for me, Matthew 1, the genealogy in Matthew, is essential only to the fact that it points that Jesus is an ancestor or is a descendant of David's line. I could care less about the names that are in there, right? I mean, what I need to know is that here's why Matthew is setting this up is because Jesus is of David's line. Mm-hmm. Just like when we get to
and
the...
that's what we were told was necessary.
Right. When we get to this list of ancestors of Noah, there's Noah, right?
There's one there.
There is one there. If you know one of the names in there, great for you, but I don't think it's important. But it's done to prove something for someone who thought it was important.
Well, the other thing is that in the art of ancient storytelling, I believe,
right,
it's very important to keep your thoughts together so you line, they're trigger points in your storytelling so you don't leave something out, so you don't mess something up in your story, because this is your only historical document is your story. There's nothing to go back and reference. It's all what's in your head and comes out of your mouth. So it's very important to remember, and you can memorize lists of names apparently more easily than you can memorize some things, but you can make stories that connect things that make it easier to remember any of it. So it's linked in the, I suppose you'd call it the art of telling stories for history. The genealogy was important because they knew even way, way back that certain people shouldn't marry certain people. Certain relationships were too close and things worked out funny. So
three arms.
It was often a woman's job. It was the honorary woman of a group, the most esteemed person, probably because this person had a better memory than most others, didn't mix up the stories and stuff, so she would be appointed to relay all these things, and they would be told over and over the same way by the same person in a small group, or a tribal or clan group, but the same person would always, at all these certain occasions, tell specific stories, and it was for the memory of it to be implanted and not forgotten.
And today's story ends with, these are the generations of the heavens and the earth as they were created. I don't know if you noticed that. It's just kind of, it seems to be an afterthought, but it supports the whole generations are important as we go through the Bible.
That one you mentioned, is that the, because Jesus had two generations listed, you know, one was Mary's and one was...
I don't remember off the top of my head.
There was another one, too.
I usually skip reading them when I'm reading, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that deters people from the Bible are lists like that.
Yes.
And so if they're not important, or if there's an idea that's important but you don't need to read the whole thing, I'm all for skipping it.
And I think that's what most people do if you're reading it by yourself. Mm-hmm. For one thing, there are names of places and people that are very hard to pronounce in our language. And it's just a whole lot easier to just skate over those and get to the story.
Okay. So I think we're going to stop here for today. The preview part, you remember I said there's a little picture that goes along with it. Now we're going to use the same picture for next week. So this might be anticlimactic, but this is our picture for the week. I'll just hold it because it's not going to sit. So the idea behind these is that we're going to start putting them up on the wall as we go. Is that wall okay for everyone? I think it fits with the black mirror too. So it'll be right up along the ceiling. And using these, we should be able to quickly try and access our memories to say, we started with God creating. Right? What else does this image mean to you?
The heavens and the earth.
It's a picture, I think it's a picture of stars and the moon.
Yeah.
That's how I interpret it, at
Yeah.
least. And
That's
it
it.
is at the beginning of each of the readings, too. So, for example, you'll see it here.
Yeah, right.
What are the little bubbles in the moon?
That's
I
a
know. Is it
great
like
question.
water? I don't know, like even the one
I
just
was
a
going to try and
swirl
color these
reminded
when we're
me.
done, and I was trying to figure out how that,
Yeah,
how.
how would you know?
Or is it the
Bubbles of
craters in the
water.
moon?
Well, it's probably
Oh, oh,
It could be the
okay. Because they
craters in the
do.
moon, or it could
Yeah.
be water,
But
which is important too.
there are little circles outside of it, too, though.
Yeah.
The planets? So by the end of our storytelling here, that's what our goal
Color.
is. To be able to use these to tell the story of the Bible. But they're saying, I'm reading along now. This is an image of the moon and stars. It reminds us of the way that in the beginning, God created the sun and the moon and the stars and the water and the earth and the animals and the people. And the story of God begins with God lovingly and joyfully creating everything and calling it good, or
Good.
in fact, in some cases, very
Very
good.
good.
So next week, there's a lot of activity outside, sorry. Next week, we are going to talk about Adam and Eve and the second creation story that we read here. Perhaps second and third, depending on how you interpret them. So we're going to focus more on pages 14, 15, 16, and 17. We haven't gotten to questions for the journey yet. Because they really are off more about the interaction of the two stories. So we really danced around doing everything that they asked us to do today, except talking, which is perfectly fine as well. And we brought in the Enuma Elish. Next week, when we talk, we're also going to look at the differences between the two stories, and there are a lot of them.
Yeah.
I have another parallel that I can talk about creation of creation in the garden.
Do we know where the two different stories, did they come from two different cultures and get melded because it was seemingly important? I wondered
And we're
because they
also
are
going
so
to talk
different.
about, if you remember Jeanette talking about the four sources.
Yes.
And what that is called is documentary hypothesis, the documentary hypothesis of the creation of the Bible. I think that's going to be too much for next week as well, but I think that
Yeah.
might be the next logical. Maybe we take a break from the stories for a week and we talk about that hypothesis and we review the first 2 weeks. Because it is important to understand why we get different stories that tell the same thing in different
Different,
ways.
yeah.
And I will tell you that today we have primarily the priestly source talking to us. So if you want to notate that for something in your notes, it's often abbreviated the P source.
That's for both of the
That's for
creation
no
stories.
today's
Just
stories.
today.
The
Just
first
today.
one.
Okay.
Next week's is going to be someone else telling the story.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to see some very different language keys that will tell us that someone else is telling us the story for the week.
So what do they call the priestly?
Priestly source.
Source.
Okay. Yeah, P.
Are we going to get to death? I find it interesting that, I don't mean you, death.
To what?
But as I was reading it, you know, and I came across that, and he didn't want the meat of the tree because it would, they would die. And I thought, now does that mean, does he mean he got death immediately or eventually? Or what did he mean by that? You know, so I just, it's interesting.
I will take a stab at that, no pun intended, and say that death doesn't always mean
I'm dead.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah. Say that we need to think about perhaps that word doesn't really mean death.
Someplace, I don't know whether you said it or where I read it or whatever, but it said death meant sin, but I was always taught, I guess, that death just meant separation from God.
Is that, I know you're using a different version, so is that at the end of,
oh, I don't know.
I'm going to guess that's where we see, by the sweat of your face you shall eat bread until you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, you are dust, and to dust you shall return.
What would happen to him if he...
Okay, so maybe it's not there.
Well, there was a reading one of the Sundays recently, I read it too, something about...
Nor shall you touch it or you shall die.
Oh, touch it, yeah. I had never put any emphasis on that either. It was just eating of it, but that just said just touch it even.
And then the serpent talks about dying and reinterprets the words. So I'm not going to hand anything out. We're going to continue in the handout we have, which is perfectly fine. Remember that break is after the first paragraph, if for some reason you need to know that. But again, it's about a river running through Eden that doesn't really affect the story at all. It affects how we... Well, no. We'll talk more about that. There is an effect to it, but not that we need to consider for our Bible study. Anything else? I'm going to turn this off and thank you for joining us. If you were joining us